Well, I've never in my life been in a riot. And there have been lots of riots in the U.S. history. Actually, in the history of the world, there's been lots of riots. And I'm actually very glad that I've not been in a riot, because riots are dangerous places to be. You've all heard stories about riots that have happened in different parts of the country and how many people get hurt or injured and sometimes even killed. And I don't think I'd want to even be in a riot. And I'm thankful to God that I've never been in a riot. The most dangerous riot, or one of the most dangerous riots that ever occurred in U.S. history, actually happened in 1863. It was in 1863, July 13th, and the U.S. Congress had passed a law that said that everyone in the United States had to serve to be conscripted into the army. But if you paid $300, you could actually purchase somebody else to fight in your place. And so they passed this law. Well, there in New York, there were a lot of immigrants that had come in, and they were very, very poor, and they couldn't get the money, the $300, to have anybody take their place, and so they got very angry. But there's something else that had happened. Because of January 1st of that same year, Abraham Lincoln had passed or had signed into law the Emancipation Proclamation. And so the slaves were freed in the South, and all of the slaves that were freed decided that they were going to come north and live in New York and try to find a job in New York. And so you had the slaves from the South coming into New York. You had the immigrants coming in, primarily from Ireland, into New York, and it was just ripe for an opportunity for a riot. And when this happened, a riot took to the street, and it was more than just about this $300 conscription fee. It ended up being a riot about race and poverty and economics and politics, and they rioted for 3 days. And when everything was said and done, there were over 2,000 people that were injured, and there were 120 people that had been killed because of this riot. It's one of the worst riots in the U.S. history. And that riot could have happened in Ephesus, but for a man, a lowly clerk, who stood up and calmed the crowd. Because riots are deadly things. And there was almost a riot because of what Paul had done in Ephesus. Now, this is interesting. By this time, Paul had been to Athens, and now he's coming back down again, and he comes to Ephesus. Now, Ephesus was a very, very well-known place. It was a very cosmopolitan place. It was a very wealthy place. Because in Ephesus was one of the seven wonders of the world. It was called the Temple to Artemis. Now, if you've been to Athens and you've seen the Parthenon, it pales in comparison. The Temple to Artemis was almost four times as large as the Parthenon. It was huge. And people would come from all over the world to come and see Artemis. Artemis was a Greek goddess, and she was the Greek goddess of the hunt. She was the Greek goddess of the bow and arrow, and she was the Greek goddess of virginity. And people came all from the whole entire region to come and to be in Ephesus, to go around the temple and to see her. And there were these artisans, of which Demetrius is one of them. Now, Demetrius is a very clever guy. He lives in Ephesus. He's around the temple. And as people come into Artemis, the temple of Artemis, as they come into Ephesus, he's out there outside. And he's selling little artifacts, little tiny artifacts of Artemis made out of silver. And so if you come and you see the temple and you go around, all of a sudden you're coming out and you see Demetrius. And all these artisans are out there, and they've got these little carved silver statues of Artemis. And so you would buy one and you would take it home with you and you'd put it somewhere on your shelf. And if you did that, then you would have a good hunt, or you would have an accurate bow and arrow or something good about the virgins in your household. I have no idea. But so people would do this. Now, what's interesting is that when Paul came into Ephesus and started preaching the word, something happened. Something amazing happened. the people who were selling these figurines, these little artifacts, their business started to go down. Now, listen to this. This is really interesting. Here we are in Ephesus. Paul is preaching. He must have been a powerful preacher. He must have been changing people's hearts. It must have been something incredible. Why? Because Demetrius, in our lesson this morning, says exactly what Paul is preaching. He goes to the people and he says, well, Paul is telling us that idols made of hand are not idols at all. To which Paul would say, hey, he got it. He knows. That's exactly what I'm preaching. If you've got an idol other than God, the creator of heaven and earth, you do not have a proper idol. Even Demetrius figured this out. But here's something else. The economy tanked because Paul was preaching. Think about that. If the economy tanks because Paul is preaching, Paul must be doing something good. Wouldn't it be wonderful if in this United States or in this world, all the things that are against God would start decreasing and all the things that are for God would start increasing because of our preaching and because of our presence? I think it would be great. Wouldn't it be wonderful? I don't want to pick on Hollywood. I always pick on Hollywood, don't I? I'm sorry, I'm going to pick on Hollywood. Wouldn't it be great if all the bad movies that come out of Hollywood would start to decrease because of Christian influence here in the United States? I'm not holding my breath. But it would be a wonderful thing if they would get the message that we like good movies and not some of the stuff that comes out of Hollywood. Anyway, so Paul is there. He's preaching the word. And obviously, it is impacting the economy because Demetrius is very, very upset. I love these Greek names, Demetrius. So Demetrius, he is going to incite a riot. Now, what does he do? He calls the people together and he says, oh, they're defaming Artemis and they're saying Artemis isn't a goddess and everything that we love about Artemis, and he puts it at Artemis, Artemis, Artemis. Now, isn't that the funniest thing, that what Demetrius really is concerned about is that he's losing money and he's blaming it on Paul and Artemis so he can rile up the crowd, but deep inside Demetrius's heart, it's all about cold cash. And he wants his business not to suffer as it's been suffering. So he riles up the people and he says these things, and a riot is about to ensue because of the idols that were in Ephesus. Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying, yeah, that's fine for them in that time and place. But you know what? I don't have a little idol of Artemis sitting on my shelf. This story has nothing to do with me. And I would say, do you know what the definition of an idol is? Do you know what idolatry is? Because idolatry, yes, it is taking a little figurine of Artemis and putting it on your shelf and worshiping her. Yes, that is idolatry. But there are other things that are considered to be idolatry too. Idolatry is anything in this world that gives you joy and happiness that you live for that is not God in heaven. If you put anything else above God in heaven, you are being idolatrous or you are close to idolatry. And you say, well, how can I know if something is idolatrous or not? Here's a couple things you could know. If you are willing to do almost anything, including breaking God's law, in order to have whatever it is that you want, then it has become an idol in your life. If you want money or wealth more than anything in this world, and you are willing to lie and to cheat and to steal and to do anything you possibly can so that your wealth will increase, maybe wealth is becoming an idol in your life. And here's another thing you can think and look at. If it was something that was going to be taken away from you and you go out of control. In Ephesus, they rioted because of it. If this is something that you cling on to so strongly that if it were taken out of your life, you wouldn't know what to do, maybe this is an idol in your life. I think about movie stars. I'm back on movie stars. Oh, I'm sorry. Lord, I need to think of different illustrations, but they just come so easily from Hollywood. Anyway, but if you're a person where fame is so important to you, that it is the number one thing in your life, and you will do anything to have fame in your life, when that fame is taken away and you absolutely are devastated by it, then perhaps fame was an idol in your life. And I must say this, people who are in Hollywood, they have to learn how to deal with this because they are rejected. They sometimes see reviews in the paper that are not favorable. Sometimes a movie comes out and people say bad things about the movie. And if they are truly centered in saying, I want everybody to love me and to say every time I'm on stage is wonderful, and you have that attitude and a negative review comes out, you are devastated. It can destroy you. Those things are idols in your life. And God does not want you to have idols in your life. And it's not just because God is holy and just and wants to be first in your life. He doesn't want you to have idols in your life because he doesn't want you to be devastated when the idols don't perform as they're supposed to. Because every idol in this world will always fail you. What are the idols that you have in your life? What are some of the things that you put precariously close to being an idol in your life? You know, for Christians, I know it's not a figurine of Artemis, for crying out loud. You're Christians. I mean, if I came to your house and saw a figurine of Artemis on the shelf, I might be upset. So you wouldn't do that. But Christians don't do that. No, Christians take something that God meant for good, and sometimes they elevate it to a position that is almost idolatrous. Sometimes the things that we love the most in this life, like take, for example, family. We love family. Now, God created family. We think family is good. We know that family helps us to grow and it's important to us. But there are sometimes Christians who are so much idolatrous of family in their life that they will go to any extent to show the world that they have a great family. And then what happens is when that family falls apart or something happens in that family, if they've put every hope and dream and life and put that as the number one thing in their life and something happens to their family, it's destroyed. It is life-threatening. And they will fall into the deepest pit. And God doesn't want you to fall into the deepest pit. He wants you to have a life full of joy and happiness and love. But the only way that's going to happen is if you put God at the top of the heap and everything else subservient to him. That's the only way. And as Christians, we sometimes come precariously close to putting other things, relationships, friendships, whatever it is, sometimes we put those things precariously close to the top. God needs to be at the top. But here's the good news. Our God is not some idol that sits as a figurine on someone's shelf. Our God is a God who actually took on flesh and came into this world so that we could see and touch and hear exactly what he looks like. So there would be absolutely no confusion as to who he is. So that when we think of who God is, we have a clear picture. It's not Artemis. It's not any other Greek gods. It is only Jesus Christ. And he is the only one that has come into this world and to claim us. And all the stupid times that we get precariously close to putting other idols in our life, he comes into our life and says, no, it is me. I'm the one. I'm the one that you should love, that you should get your joy and your hope from. Nothing else. And when we do that, with God at the center of our life, we know that he will never fail us. He will always be there for us. No matter what happens and what other idols fall in our life, he will always be there for us. There was this riot that almost happened in Ephesus. And what's amazing is it's the town clerk that comes and stops the riot. We don't even know his name. I mean, here in Pima County, who would it be? Bill Staples or something, or Chuck Huckleberry. I don't know. One of the county officials. And he comes out and he says exactly the right thing. He said, you guys are getting ready to riot. And this riot's not any good. And if you guys riot, it's not Paul that's going to get hurt. It's all of you that are going to get hurt. It's going to be painful for all of you. You might even be thrown. Some of you might die. Some of you might be thrown in jail. Riots are no good thing. Nobody wins for riot. If you're angry at Paul, take him to proconsul, take legal action against him, but don't riot. And Demetrius, who had whipped up this frenzy and this riot, the people stopped and said, oh yeah, he's right. Maybe we shouldn't riot. And then they all peacefully went home. Paul went on. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing story. I wish I knew the guy's name. because it's probably a great Greek name or something. I don't know. Anyway, but the fact is that Jesus Christ is the one to riot about. He is the only one to stake your whole entire life on, because he stuck his whole entire life on each and every one of you.